Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC, and I'm here with Mike Christel, PharmCom's Editorial Director. We are pleased to be joined today by David Komen, CEO of Science 37, a clinical research company that aims to unite patients with clinical trials via its technology platform. Since its founding back in 2014, the company has conducted more than 100 decentralized clinical trials and engaged more than 475,000 patients. 2 years ago, David joined Science 37 as its CEO by way of ERT, a global data and tech company, serving as its chief strategy officer. David, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Great. So could you describe the business model of Science 37 for us? What in your eyes may be unique about it compared to other models or approaches in the clinical research technology space?
Well, let's start with that then. Let's start with the traditional clinical trial model so that we can ground the listeners in what that really looks like. If you think about the way clinical research has been done for the last 60 to 90 years, it's been relatively unchanged. And it starts with the concept that a clinical trial sponsor, this is typically a pharmaceutical company, will set up a network of traditional clinical trial sites. Those are hospitals or clinics around the world. And each of those hospitals and clinics have their own people, processes, and technologies that they use in order to be able to manage the clinical trial from within their practice. And then they go and find patients and ultimately recruit them and matriculate them through the study. And of course, through this disconnected process, these investigators really are hamstrung with the number of patients who happen to live around the catchment area of the site itself. So interesting data point here, only about 5% of any provider out there actually participates in clinical research today because of the burden that is placed on them to be able to execute something from their institution. And of course, if you're only recruiting patients from that 5% of the total population, only about 8% of patients are ever approached about joining clinical research, which is, you know, a huge restriction, if you will, in a world where you're trying to enable anybody to participate. And the biggest issue with clinical research is the speed at which you can get patients to come into the clinical trial. I think that's probably a good background for the listeners relative to what the traditional trial model looks like. And then when you juxtapose that with what Science 37 is trying to do, it's ultimately to enable universal access to patients and providers anywhere, no matter where they happen to live. And so if we're able to enable any provider to be able to participate, and they can go find the patients within their catchment area, that's, you know, a humongous win. If you are enabling any patient to participate and they can go to any provider, that also changes the model. And really the way Science 37 has constructed its business model is through an operating system. And the operating system has two core components to it, the first of which are what we call our specialized networks. And those specialized networks consist of patient communities. And so we find patients from virtually anywhere. So it could be through social media, it could be through a provider that refers the patient, it could be through a traditional provider, it could be through a pharmacy or a lab, you name it. But ultimately, we find that patient and we recruit them into the study. Underneath the specialized networks category, we also have telemedicine investigators, and those investigators are there to be able to manage those patients no matter where they live. We also have mobile nurses that are available to go to the patient's home to do procedures, or we could send patients to a facility. It's dependent on the protocol and what we're trying to accomplish. We have remote coordinators who choreograph the whole study and connected devices that we plug into the technology platform. And the technology platform, of course, is the second part of our operating system. And that technology platform is designed to enable that workflow from any of those constituents to be able to expedite the clinical trial. And ultimately, we're doing that to generate the evidence that's required in order to identify whatever the efficacy or safety data that we're trying to collect. and then harmonize that data ultimately for regulatory submission.
Certainly a lot going on with your business model lately, but also just out in the public setting. Your company recently went public on NASDAQ, and congrats, by the way, on that.
Thanks.
So you have this new infusion of capital through the public offering. So maybe you could talk about that, and maybe also it was interesting that your company went the route of the special purpose acquisition company, the SPAC route or blank check company avenue to go public. Can you kind of talk about that journey and the factors behind this move from your company? This pretty big move in the last month.
Yeah, let's talk about why. The first part of the question, which is why go mm-hmm. public and why raise so much capital. And I'll start with the success that we're having as a company. The operating model that we have today is realizing great results. So relative to a traditional clinical trial process, we're able to recruit patients up to 15 times faster. We're able to retain those patient relationships up to 28% longer, and we're able to recruit three times the diversity in the clinical trial. And so with these results, it's having, as you might expect, outstanding results in terms of our overall business performance. In fact, if you take the first three quarters of the year to date, 75% of our bookings come from repeat buyers, just because we've been able to prove that this model is working in a much more effective way than they had been able to achieve in the past. So we're really proud of our ability to help accelerate clinical research. And if you do that, it brings more drugs to market, it makes people healthier, it has all those other great benefits. But given the success that we have, we said, okay, well, there's a real opportunity for us to accelerate the growth of the company, bring that business model to more sponsors. And we're taking the infusion of capital and we're investing it into our commercial organization so that we can have more conversations. We just have a limitation of the number of people we can speak to at any given time. So expanding that from fairly dramatically, expanding geographically. And we recently announced a partnership with CIMIC and 3H Medi in Japan as we expand beyond just US and Europe into Asia. And then expanding our technology platform, which is really the core of the product, and making sure that we have all the feature functionalities that we want in order to be able to execute every single clinical trial. So the vision here is to be the operating system that powers every clinical trial. And so today there's some feature functionality capabilities that we'd like to make some investments in to speed that up and broaden the aperture of what is possible. So then the second part of your question is about the SPAC and the fact that we went into market with a SPAC and through our partner LifeSci Acquisition Corp. And a little bit of history on this. LifeSci has been an investor in Science 37 for quite some time. And so we started taking a look at the pathway to go public. And, we could have gone down the traditional IPO route, but, with a partner who had, not just a SPAC, but a really well put together, well thought out SPAC. It was only $80 million. So you're thinking about what kind of funds that you want to have from the SPAC itself. There's two parts to a SPAC. It's really the initial trust that it was $80 million. And then you go off and you raise a pipe of additional investors on top of that. And we raised another $200 million through our pipe. And what the pipe does is it really helps to validate the price, the valuation of the company. And so finding LifeSci, who had smaller trust in which to invest with, and then building a big pipe behind it enabled us to get more predictability for price, but also the trust itself was without warrants. And so typically a lot of the SPACs that have been out there have warrants associated with it, public warrants. And so it's pretty dilutive to have other companies kind of hanging on that and turning in warrants over time. And so it's a free option for us in order to be able to execute. And the other beautiful thing about LifeSci is they're an advisory, and they're advising more than 400 biotech companies today. And so that becomes a feeding system, if you will, into our commercial organization. And so it's really just a perfect outcome for us.
So you can actually leverage some of their expertise and working with other companies in the space in a way. Is that
exactly? And so it's familiar in multiple ways. It's familiar because they knew us, and it's familiar because they have a lot of relationships that are already sitting within their holding, and it works out best for everybody.
Shifting gears a little bit, I know you did reference the diversity factor behind this, and I know that Science 37 did recently announce the creation of a foundation called the Diversity in Clinical Trials Foundation, and there's even a dedicated business unit for diversity to help support this initiative. Could you just elaborate on your inspiration behind this and what kind of got you into developing this foundation?
I mean, if you go back to the mission of the company, the mission of the company is to provide universal access to patients and providers anywhere. But if you look at the traditional clinical trial model, the diversity or people of color or participants of color are coming in at about a third of the rate of the real population. And so now we take the Science 37 model because we don't have geographic limitations. It does enable us to enroll anybody from anywhere. And so inherently, we are getting a lot more diversity in our clinical trials than what is taking place in a traditional model. And now we've gotten to the point where pharma companies are coming to us specifically to help fill their diversity gap. And so we are able to fill that void on behalf of pharma companies. You know, but going back to the bigger idea about enabling anyone to participate from anywhere, this is this is a group of people who are not only being excluded from participating, but it also has a pretty significant scientific issue. When you get into commercialization of a drug, you want to make sure you have the most representative population as possible. And so this is why internally, we formed a business unit that's dedicated very specifically to finding diversity in clinical research, getting diverse patients involved. And we're creating a virtuous cycle here where we'll get more diverse patients in there. And then from an internal perspective, we want to continue to build the diversity within Science 37 so that these communities are pulled in and they're managed by diverse employees as well. And so, you know, we think that that's a great virtuous cycle that we can build, not just on behalf of the industry, but also within the walls of Science 37 itself. Now, you mentioned the foundation. And so as part of this transaction, we created something called the, as you noted, the Diversity in Clinical Research Foundation. And the whole purpose behind this foundation is to do what we're trying to do as a company, which is ultimately increase the diversity in studies. You know, it's a really super fancy name. It describes exactly what we're trying to do with the foundation. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is to find others that will participate with us. And so we're raising funds and we're deploying funds to nonprofit organizations that have relationships with patients of color who don't typically get invited into clinical research to help enable them to organize their communities to increase participation, not just for Science 37 studies, but for all clinical research. And so, you know, we think we're doing the greater good here.
I want to draw attention to what the SEC recently did. The SEC, they approved NASDAQ's board diversity rule, which in a nutshell says that listed companies are required to have at least two diverse board members. Could you discuss how that'll maybe impact this whole idea of diversity within clinical trials in general moving forward?
Part of the answer to that question is really about the Science 37 board and the construct of our board. And actually, if you look at the Science 37 board, it's quite diverse and we're super proud of that and enlightened. And I think it goes back to the full culture of Science 37, going back to the mission, who we are, who we're trying to be, creating diversity across the board and then the organization and creating a virtuous cycle across the entire ecosystem. So I think we're delivering against that super well. The fact that NASDAQ has some rules around it are wonderful. We passed that a long time ago. So, we're super proud of kind of the position that the company's in and where we're going.
Yeah, David, just shifting gears a bit back just to the, this kind of new digital, tech-focused, clinical research landscape. Science 37, is focused on using its operating system, to enable more so-called, agile clinical trials. Through that concept, how can sponsors, your trial partners, clinical teams, find patients more efficiently and then retain these patients?
Yeah, we refer to the future of clinical research really as the agile clinical trial. because, you know, we're super proud of the speed at which we're recruiting patients into clinical research, going to them directly and pulling them into telemedicine investigator. And there's some cases in which the protocol lends itself to enrolling a patient directly with the provider that they currently have, and then sending those patients home on subsequent visits. There are some protocols where it makes sense to enroll them remotely and then send them to local point of care centers in order to be able to do some of the visits. In some cases, our pharma partners are going to want to think about how to engage their key opinion leaders. And some of those key opinion leaders have large institutions where there are, have their own embedded technology in order to be able to manage the trials. And so if you think about the future of clinical research, there's three things that are really important. Number one, you have to enroll patients as fast as possible. Number two, you have to be operationally efficient. And number three, you have to be able to produce high fidelity data. And you're going to look at developing the protocol to enable all three of those things to take place. But in order to be able to execute that, you have to have the ability to go find patients and providers anywhere. So don't limit yourself to geographic restrictions. Doesn't mean that you can't find people who have brick and mortar sites. It means you don't want to restrict yourself to just that 5% of the total population. And they have to figure out what's the right thing for the patient. And today we're sending most patients in a traditional clinical trial are traveling an average of 26 miles in order to go to a traditional clinical trial site. And so that's a huge burden, especially in a trial like ALS or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease or cancer. You have to eliminate that patient burden. So how can you operationalize this thing as efficiently as possible is extraordinarily important. And then finally, trying to figure out how to lock in the best kind of data. And for what it's worth, if you take a look at a traditional clinical trial model where every single site have their own people, processes, and technologies, you know, how is that going to drive the best quality data at the end of the study? You really need one set of processes in order to enable all that data to be collected in a homogeneous way in order to be able to have the highest quality data possible. And so the Science 37 model really fills in this agile trial of the future where it can be used on-premise, it could be used off-premise. You could have a telemedicine investigator, you could have a brick and mortar investigator. You can send patients to local facility, you can have a mobile nurse that goes into the patient's home. But to have an operating system that's flexible enough to be able to manage an agile trial that gives you those three benefits: faster enrollment, greatest efficiency, and highest quality data.
That sort of feeds into to the next question we have for you. We did see that Science 37 released some new data, a survey on the clinical research landscape and the industry overall. And you sort of concluded that there is definitely a shift right now in the way the trials are being conducted. And obviously, a lot of people would agree with that. We were just looking to see if you could maybe highlight a couple key data elements from this survey, maybe particularly which therapeutic and disease areas look to be impacted the most, you know, for decentralized clinical trials. And maybe kind of broadly speaking, if you could touch on this, do you see this as the beginnings of a fundamental change in how trials protocols are designed and then the trial in and of itself?
I mean, absolutely. There is a massive shift going on in the clinical trial landscape. And, you know, it's that shift from having to think about it in your stagnant brick and mortar kind of environment to thinking about having the mobility that is afforded through decentralizing components, if not the entire clinical trial. And so this study essentially confirms that more pharmaceutical execs believe that the trials they're going to be running in 2022 will be more decentralized versus being done in a traditional clinical trial model. It's an important shift here because only a couple of years ago, the work that Science 37 was doing and, you know, some others that were sort of experimenting was trapped in innovation centers, so innovation labs, experimenting on whether or not this type of activity could actually happen. Now, today, it's not a question as to whether or not you're going to decentralize components or the entire trial. It's a fait accompli. It's going that direction because we've been able to prove that you can recruit patients faster, you can keep them longer, you can get more diversity within the clinical trial. And so the movement is shifting and decentralization is here to stay. In fact, now it's the preferred methodology to go into market with. And we expect that to continue to move into the future. And, you know, I guess to build on what we talked about before, I could see the day where decentralization is the full model. And maybe you have just a couple of key opinion leaders that have brick and mortar sites that you tag along into it. So anyway, huge fundamental shift in the industry that we see. We see in particular the area of oncology, CNS, rare diseases, and immunology having the highest uptake of decentralization use. And from a phase perspective, phase 2, 3, and 4, which are the largest growing areas, and phase 3 is where most of the spending and activity is placed, particularly in terms of the number of patients that need to be involved in clinical research. And then the components that sit underneath that in order to be able to deliver decentralized components of a clinical trial. You know, it's interesting, there's companies out there who refer to decentralization as the ability to execute e-clinical outcome assessments or e-consent or maybe telemedicine. But the reality of the Science 37 model is, of course we have that. Of course we have the ability to do e-consent and eCOA. And you know, we have a telemedicine plugin that is fully integrated rather than just a bolt-on. But it's the workflow of all of the parties. So the patient, the mobile nurse, the telemedicine investigator, the on-premise investigator, and the coordinator choreographing everything across the clinical trial continuum. Now, you know, we believe that we do that better than anybody else, just purely from a tech standpoint. But then we go another step further. And as we go further, that includes our ability to go find those patients, our ability to deploy nurses, our ability to support the patient through investigators, and the ability to have a coordinator that choreographs the whole trial, no matter where those patients are, with the same processes, utilizing the same technology, creating continuity and higher fidelity data ultimately for the clinical trial.
Yeah, these trials certainly took off in the last couple of years during the pandemic. What challenges, though, remain in DCT integration at trial sites?
Thinking about decentralization from the origination of a protocol, I think is a real opportunity for us. So you know, when we're deploying the technology, we can help save a trial that's halfway built. We could start adding some capabilities on top of it. But if you really want to do it right, you have to consider all those factors in the protocol development. And you know, we work with pharma companies on their protocols to make sure that as they think about building it the right way, to be able to collect that high fidelity data and it reduce the patient burden along that continuum, how do you set that protocol up in order to be able to enable success? I think it's a super important thing for people to think about. You know, just don't take your old protocol and copy and paste it, because then you're going to be stuck doing it the old way. Think about the way it should be done or how it could be done or should be done in the new world when you have that level of flexibility that the Science 37 operating system enables you to be able to take advantage of.
Taking a step back, I guess, from a bit more of a broader perspective, how would you envision the future of clinical research overall?
I see a world where you are executing the trial as efficiently as possible. You're finding the patients as quickly as possible. You're executing as efficiently as possible with the least amount of burden for your investigators and for your patients. And you're creating the high fidelity data. The only way to do that is to separate yourself from the way it's been done and to think about the way it should be done. And think about it from the mindset of your patient. Starting with your patient, what's the best way to find them? What's the best way to manage them? What's the best way to matriculate them through the clinical trial? And that answer, 99% of the time, is going to be enable them to do things from the comfort of their own home. And you could even start with the question, enable them to participate, because we're excluding 92% of the rest of the population. And I guess I would maybe end with this one thought. If you are executing a clinical trial today, the traditional way, knowing that you have the ability to enroll patients from anywhere, there's an ethical obligation to be able to enable any of those patients in the 92% of the rest of the population to be able to participate. And the only way you can do that is through decentralization.
There you have it. Efficiency and utilizing technology and everything that's available at one's fingertips today in the 21st century, that'll really be the
the way to go. So David, really do appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing your thoughts for our listeners. I think they'll be able to gather quite a bit of knowledge from our discussion today. So thank you so much for your time.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.